From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
They come to the final 16. Good Magic on the outside is second. Audible third toward the inside. Then it's still Regard. They're coming to the wire. He's just awesome. Justify has won the Kentucky Derby.
West Coast running out of puff has given a good account of himself, but Accelerate keeps powering on. Accelerate 2.5 lengths coming away to beat West Coast and Isotherm.
From our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios, welcome to the Equine Forum.
Wonder Gadot's in front, and she's dashed away in the Queen's Plate, ahead by a century and a second. But there's no doubt who's the best today, and it's all about Wonder Gadot, Wonder Woman herself. Demolish them in the Queen's Plate.
Mendelssohn is on the inside. Diversify is given way. Here comes the finish. It is going to be a photo finish, and I think it was Discreet Lover. Manny Franco waves his whip in victory. Thundersnow is right there on the wire, too.
Now, here's Anthony Stabile and Jude Feld.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Equine Forum here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. I'm the Big A, Anthony Stabile at the Big A Aqueduct Racetrack, high atop the finish line, filling in for the vacationing Mike Penna. Down in our Jimmy John's of Lexington Broadcast Studios is the pontiff of the Pick Four, Jude Feld, in his usual perch on Saturday morning. Welcome to the Breeders' Cup hangover version of the Equine Forum, as the World Championships are in the rearview mirror, and we start to look ahead to wrapping up 2018, and of course, into the future, 2019, and a lot going on still with a little less than a couple of months left in 2018. Good morning, Jude.
Good morning.
What's going on? How's it down in the bluegrass today?
Oh, it's kind of freezing. There were little dip and dot snowballs on the flowers and the
dip and
rooftops.
Dots.
it was a shock to the system. I'm thinking, why am I not in Florida?
Well, soon enough, you'll be down there in a few weeks for our coverage of opening day at Gulfstream Park for the Claiming Crown. You'll be hosting the Equine Forum with my man Mark Otto from Red Brand, and we're going to still find you a co-host for the afternoon show. I woke up. I've been going to sleep ridiculously early since I got back from Lexington and Louisville. And woke up at like 2:30 in the morning to get some water, and it was 50 degrees. I said, oh, this, you know, we had the rain came through, and we're off the turf here at Aqueduct today, so we'll lose a couple of stakes on the turf. And we had a lot of rain yesterday. Got about 1.3 inches of rain here in New York between yesterday afternoon and last night into the morning, and it was 50 degrees, and I was like, oh, maybe it's not going to be as bad as they thought. Well, I woke up this morning, and I'm not usually up this early. I'm certainly not out this early in the morning, and it dropped about 5 degrees since 2:30 in the morning, which is not supposed to happen, and the wind makes it feel even colder. It feels like it's in the 30s. It's officially 45 degrees, but the sun is out. It's trying to get some of that moisture out of the main track. Right now, the main track, if they were running the first in 10 minutes, it would be sloppy. But we'll see. We haven't seen too many horses out this morning as well. Not to be unexpected with all the rain we got last night.
It's 26 degrees here in Lexington, and it's only 24 degrees in Louisville. So,
wow, so yeah. I left just in time.
A little frost on the pumpkin, you might say.
Wow. Yeah, well, Breeders' Cup's in the rearview mirror. Another fantastic 2 days of championship racing. And we get to see a couple of them, Jude, come back in that Pegasus World Cup. At least a couple of them. City of Light and Accelerate going to duke it out one more time before going together to Lane's End Farm. That'll be interesting, huh? We'll see who has the bragging rights going into the breeding shed come February.
Well, I was trying to convince some of my clients to breed to City of Light last night, as a matter of fact. It was a couple nice horses, Lane's End, snagging. They seem to do that. They seem to get them all out of the same race.
Get a Whitney from that Whitney from 2015. They got the first three finishes, Liam's Map, Honor Code, Liam's Map, and Tonalist. I got to see everybody on Monday.
Yeah, and they've turned out all right, huh?
Yeah.
So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, like I said, you know, Breeders' Cup's behind us. We still have some important racing, obviously, left. The Clark on Thanksgiving weekend at Churchill Downs. The Cigar Mile here. Ran into Danny Summers. It was his birthday on Thursday. Ran into Danny yesterday. Plan is to run Mind Your Biscuits back in the Cigar Mile off that flop in the Breeders' Cup Classic. I also read somewhere yesterday that there's a chance they're going to run Mendelsohn back in that Cigar Mile, which would be pretty interesting, getting him to go a one-turn mile. Maybe that'll be his gig.
Aiden O'Brien just bound to determine, isn't he?
He's going to win on the dirt.
I got to send him a white flag. He can just run up the pole.
Yeah, apparently he was on the Coolmore roster here in America right after the Breeders' Cup, and now he's off. So I wonder if that's a little bit of a little foreboding, a little look into the future. Maybe he's not going to go straight to stud. If they run him in the Cigar, you would think they'll keep him around for the Pegasus World Cup. Either one. And they could run him in the dirt or the turf, I guess. He's accomplished enough on both. But yeah, you know, and that's what I think the Pegasus brings to the table. It keeps these horses in training a little more. Maybe we get a race or two, in fact, out of them. And who knows? Maybe a horse like Mendelsohn, they decide that if he can't pick off the Cigar or the Pegasus, that it's important enough to run him next year. And we get to see a horse like him stay in training.
Are they bound and determined to keep him on the dirt?
I mean, it certainly looks like, you know, the fact that he was on the Coolmore U.S. roster would lead me to believe they want to make him a sire here as opposed to taking him back home to Ireland and to make him more attractive here. I think a grade one win on the dirt in America would help. He has the grade two win on the dirt in the UAE Derby of last year, but, you know, I think he's far more attractive if they can get a grade one win on his resume in the States.
Yeah. I don't know. It wouldn't keep me from breeding to him because, you know, I mean, his pedigree has plenty of dirt horses in it. And, you know, just because he didn't, you know, win a grade one in the dirt yet, I guess right. We have to say. But, you know, that wouldn't affect me. I think he's a talented horse with a lot of speed, and he's going to get plenty of dirt runners regardless. But I know the people in the stallion business think, you know, everybody pays attention to every little thing. And they're right to a certain degree. Most people aren't very creative. So they just go by the numbers.
I wouldn't mind getting a chance to dirty that boy up a little bit here at the Big A. Get him into Queens. He's seen all these beautiful places, right? He's been to Maidan and all the tracks that he's raced in Europe. And he's been to Belmont and Churchill Downs and Saratoga.
Make him go to Aqueduct Winter.
Bring my man here for the Cigar Mile. Get him a couple of slices from Romeo's right down the road. He'll be from a couple of White Castles. He'll be just fine. We'll make Mendelsohn feel right at home here in Q Thorough, as we like to call it. We got a fantastic show lined up for you this morning. We'll stick with the breeding game a little bit. We got Bloodstock Agent Stuart Morris going to join us right after this first break. The Baron, Mike Penna, while he is on vacation, he did not leave without a thumbprint on the program. He interviewed Dr. Jim Chipetta. Jim is the president of Flair and the co-inventor of Flair nasal strips, the equine nasal strips. We'll hear from Jim a little later on this morning. And then the second half of the show, Luis Saez won his 2,000th race yesterday aboard Y'all Come Now here at the Big A. Luis will join us at the top of the 9 o'clock hour. Lacey Gaudette's been on fire down at Laurel. She's won with four of her last five, including her last three runners. She has three in today, including Tour de Force in the Richard W. Small at Laurel. And jockey agent Ron Anderson, him and his client, Joel Rosario, lit it up last weekend like Lacey Gaudette's been doing at Laurel. They did it at the Breeders' Cup. Three wins for Joel, including the $6 million Classic aboard Accelerate. We'll talk to Ron about how he got aboard Accelerate earlier this summer and their plans to head to California this winter as opposed to Florida. All of that and more this morning on the Equine Forum. We'll take a break, come back, and have Stuart Morris live for you. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Woodford Feed, where tradition merges with technology. Family owned since 1940 and providing exceptional customer service, Woodford Feed specializes in the highest quality feed, using only the finest ingredients to ensure optimal nutrition for your horses. In addition, Woodford Feed can help with all your farm needs, including field seed, fertilizer, and weed control. So whether your horse is sprinting around the racetrack or has a foal by her side, count on Woodford Feed to provide the quality nutrition necessary to perform at the highest level. Woodford Feed, Versailles, Kentucky.
Hi, Tony.
Hey, Matthew.
There's a reason why Tony Steaks and Seafood is my favorite restaurant. It's because I want to feel part of the family. Isn't that right, Tony?
That's right. There's a saying on the wall that I truly believe in. There's always room for one more at our table. We just want you to be part of our family.
And believe me, you will be. It's Tony Steaks and Seafood right across from Triangle Park. Visit them at TonySteaksandSeafood.com.
Tom's Ready, a multiple graded stakes winning millionaire by Sire of Sires More Than Ready. As a 3-year-old, Tom's Ready scored in the prestigious Grade 2 Woody Stevens Stakes at Belmont and defeated Champion Run Happy in the Grade 3 ACAC at Churchill Downs before winning the Grade 3 Bold Ruler at 4, earning a 107 buyer, the co-fastest buyer at 7 furlongs in 2017. Tom's Ready, new for 2018 at Spendthrift Farm.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Heard about the new 3E tractors from John Deere?
What's new?
New look, better maneuverability than those other color tractors, added conveniences like onboard diagnostics to make for an easier day, and all-around greater performance.
Well, sounds interesting.
They also have one of the lowest sticker prices in the industry.
Sounds like I'm in.
Just head to your John Deere dealer. I'm sure they'll take care of you.
Sounds like they already have.
Introducing the all-new 2018 John Deere 3E Series tractors. More functionality, same affordability.
Tune in to HRRN to catch all the racing action on Thanksgiving Eve, Wednesday, November 21st, with the 6th edition of the Land of Enchantment Day live from Zia Park Casino Hotel and Racetrack. 7 Thoroughbred Stakes will be on tap worth $1 million, highlighted by the $250,000 Zia Park Derby, the $250,000 Zia Park Oaks, and the $150,000 Zia Park Championship Stakes. Nominations are free to all Land of Enchantment Day stakes races and close Tuesday, November 6th. For more information, go to ZiaParkCasino.com.
This is Steve Asmussen. You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Upstart and Blofeld anchor down in front as they come to the top of the stretch. It is Anchor Down joined on the outside by Frosted. And Frosted has gone on by and he has exploded. He is absolutely blowing his competition away. Oh, my goodness. Look at Frosted today. Frosted's 10 in front. Frosted is absolutely rubbed in the mat mile. He was wrapped up in a final time of 1 minute 32.73 seconds. Anchor Down, Upstart, a means flatter. They were a mile behind them.
Larry Comas on the call of the 2016 Met Mile. Frosted looked like he sprouted wings. Remember calling that race from, covering that race from the Belmont Park studios. It really looked like he was going to fly up to us that afternoon. Welcome back to the Equine Forum here on HRRN. The Pontiff's down in Lexington. I'm here at the Big A, hashtag the Big A, at the Big A. Nice enough to join us now is Stuart Morris. Stuart, one of the top bloodstock agents in the land, and he's hoping the Frost that he sold this week can emulate Daddy at some point. Aren't you, Stuart?
Good morning, guys. How are you all? Can you hear me?
Yeah, perfect.
Yes.
Awesome.
What's happening?
Awesome. Yeah, no, she was a very nice filly. I was very fortunate to have her in my shed row. And she was very well received over there, and certainly Frosted and his exploits at the racetrack were a major help in getting her sold for that kind of money a couple days ago out there at Keeneland.
Did she look like her dad?
Yeah. Yeah, she's a beautiful gray filly. So, yeah, I mean, he's a beautiful gray horse, right? I mean, black cats and black kittens. It certainly helped us that she was a New York bred, that I think that's always an asset. And we were also lucky with some timing that her two-year-old half-brother broke his maiden Breeders' Cup Saturday very impressively for Chad Brown and Bill Lawrence up at Aqueduct in his second lifetime start by Spikestown as a two-year-old, very fast time, and spoke with Chad Sunday at Fasig Tipton, and he gave me the green light and seemed to think the horse has a very bright future, and he's very excited about him. So we were able to let folks know about that as well, and I think we kind of had a few things come together for us and worked out very well.
It's nice when a parlay hits like that, huh?
Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir. It always is. You know that.
Yeah. Doesn't happen all the time.
No.
Rarely, actually.
Very rarely. That's why the odds get better and better when you go to parlays, for sure.
Good to have that home game with the Breeders' Cup right in your own backyard this year. Do you think it helps over at the sales rings?
Well, I think that it certainly doesn't hurt. And I think that the November sales now, particularly the beginning parts of them over with what the job Boyd Browning and the folks have done over at Fasig Tipton and what the guys, you know, Mr. Ellison and the team over at Keeneland have done to stack those early books with really quality offerings, it certainly doesn't hurt when they're in the neighborhood. And I would think that any owners that would be thinking about adding to their bloodstock portfolio that happen to be in town for the Breeders' Cup, you know, it makes it a lot easier for them to say, oh, we'll just pound up the road an hour and a half and see if we can find something else. Where if they're in California or New York or somewhere else in the country and they have to get on another plane after a long weekend of racing, it might be a little bit of a hindrance. It certainly doesn't hurt, that's for sure.
Yeah, you've got a captive audience. Yeah,
kind of got a captured audience. It was very similar, obviously much more local when we were at Keeneland a couple of years ago as well, because folks were able to literally look at horses at the bottom of the hill and walk up the hill and go to the races. So that was certainly a unique experience for us, the sellers, that weekend when we had that great weekend at church at Keeneland when American Pharoah capped his career and everything went so well there. But these November sales, guys, to me, they're kind of becoming a beast of their own, to be honest with you. I mean, they're becoming a global draw for the top breeding programs in the world. I mean, all you have to do is look at the result sheets and see who's there buying horses. And literally, it's a truly international bench buying those horses. And it's been exciting to see a lot of those horses stay home lately and not leave the country, thanks to the likes of Mandy Pope and folks like that that are keeping those mares in America for so long. They seem to be leaving the country and going to Europe and Japan. But, you know, it's definitely an international buyer base, and I'm sure I have to believe the Breeders' Cup is part of that success as well.
You know, I think a lot of people think that when the Breeders' Cup wraps up, everybody in the industry gets to take a little bit of a break. Jude and I both know that not to be the case, and obviously you as well. No real time to breathe, especially with those sales right after the World Championships.
No, sir, not at all. Not at all. It becomes the fall is a very busy schedule for all of us, obviously, with the big Breeders' Cup lead-up races. And as a consigner and a seller, or certainly all the buyers as well, we're in the midst of the throes of the biggest yearling show in the world in September that goes right into three sales in October in three states. And then we go right to the Breeders' Cup and then the two-week marathon with thousands of horses at Fasig Tipton and Keeneland. So there's not really a break at all for us. And I was just thinking this morning when I woke up and didn't have to get up at 5 and go to the barn because I have a ship-in day today. You know, how nice it was to actually watch the sun come up in my yard and sit here at my desk and do a little work on my catalogs for the next couple of days and take a breath for the first time. And it feels like 3 months. But those are the blessings and the trappings of hard of success and hard work and opportunity. So we just got to keep grinding on. But it's definitely – there's no real break for us anymore anywhere in this game. What do you think, Anthony? I mean, there's just big racing – big calendars. I mean, we're starting about winding down the year for the Breeders' Cup and the end of the year stuff, but we're already talking about the Triple Crown for next year and how good this exciting 2-year-old crop's going to be looking next year, going to the Oaks and the Derby and then to the Travers and the Alabama and so forth. So, I mean, it's really become a year-round game.
You had a banner year this year.
Back to the Breeders' Cup already.
Exactly.
I'm sorry, Jude.
What was that, Jude?
I said you had a banner year this year. I mean, that's more than fair to say. You've been crushing it at all the sales. Now, as you look forward to next year, do you have enough horses and some blue sky to look forward to keep the ball rolling?
I think we do. You know, just like any trainer getting his two-year-olds, you know, soon-to-be two-year-olds down to get broke in the Carolinas or Florida, you know, we start evaluating the talents of the next crops coming. I'm very fortunate with a lot of very loyal and successful breeders and pinhookers that are clients of mine. And, you know, if I've been very fortunate that, you know, what's coming, if somebody's having a bad year over here, somebody over here is having a better year. So, you know, not unlike most trainers in the country, there's only so much we control with the stock that's in our barn, but it certainly looks exciting right now. My father in particular has got some nice colts at his place, beautiful Cantheros and a lovely unhappy colt that's very exciting, and some other nice ones. I have some clients that have bought some nice weanlings already to pinhook. I have a lovely Taffet filly laying in the bushes that we're going to get beautiful and let her come out there sometime next year and jump, hopefully sell for a big price. So right now, Jude, it does look very exciting, very positive, for sure, sir.
Cool.
Jude, so it's always about the next year, right? I mean, you know, what's the old adage? You know, nobody ever ended it when they had a nice two-year-old in the program. You know, I mean, we're all looking for the next great one. That's the great thing of our game, and I think that's why we have such fascinating characters in our industry, is everybody's looking for the positive side of life and looking for the next opportunity. You know, there's always another step to just pick yourself up, dust yourself off, and reload and go again.
Jude and I were talking about this earlier, and we're talking with Stuart Morris. We were talking about this earlier, Stuart, how, like, you know, Lane's End was able to nail those three stallions from that Whitney that year, Honor Code, Liam's Map, and Tonalist, and how they've done it again with City of Light and Accelerate, and how some of these farms are able to do that. When do you start looking ahead? I mean, obviously, you're looking at the racetrack and what they're doing on the track, but when do you start really, like, forming an opinion on what you're thinking about from these new stallions that are coming out next year?
Well, we just like everybody else does that does what I do, because I'm not only a consigner, I manage a couple large equine portfolios and help with the matings and the stallion selection for the mares and all those things. We evaluate them just like everybody else does. And I do, you know, what was their race record? How are they bred? Were they sturdy? Were they fragile? You know, all those things we look for. Physical attributes, of course. And then, you know, just like anything else, there's certain stallions that'll communicate well with you, horses that you believe in, that you think really, really work. And horses that just don't, for whatever reason. Doesn't mean they don't want to be successful. I mean, I try to stay honest with everybody I work for in the business, and I'll be the first one to tell anybody that I didn't think Medalladoro had a shot. You know, he's one of the best stallions in the world today, and I wasn't on the bus until he made me get on the bus. You know, and there's been plenty of stallions I thought were going to be, you know, lead pipes to make it and be the next great ones that didn't make it at all. So you just have to find the ones you like. You know, you look for those horses that you know, obviously I'm a big advocate and a big fan of brilliance. I mean, I'll forgive a horse with a short racing career if he had some real brilliance, a horse like Army Mule over there at Hillendale, you know, a little bit of a, you know, limited number of starts, but when he showed up, it was some sure magical ability that horse has, you know, a horse with an interesting pedigree. But I'm a big fan of brilliance. Just one time, all I got to see is one time. And then I really like to see that kind of, you know, at least the potential to hopefully reproduce that kind of talent. Because at the end of the day, that's what we're all trying to do, right, guys? I mean, whether you're a breeder or a buyer or a trainer or, you know, all of us in this industry want to get to the pinnacle. We want to get to the Breeders' Cup. We want to get to the first Saturday in May. We want to win those grade ones. And there's very unique and very few stallions that didn't show us, at least on the track, that brilliance that went ahead and did it anyway. So I think that's one of the biggest things for me is, so even if they don't win a stake, but they break their maiden out of the television, they just run out of the TV, you know, that's one of the major things for me.
Interesting. Army Mule's a great example because, like you said, I mean, he only ran three times, but when he showed up, man, they were just devastating.
Exactly. Exactly. And so those are the horses that I'll take a shot on a horse like that because his ability was just absolutely, you know, breathtaking. Like he said, devastating. And so those horses, you know, will find some mares to breed to him this year, I hope. You know, I also have an immense amount of respect for John Secura as a stallion master, and I think that guy's pretty sharp, and his PPs and his track record lends itself to that as well. You know, so that always brings credence to a stallion like him as well. But, you know, not dissimilar to McLean's music over there with John Secura's, right? Like one lifetime start. But look at the results of the racetrack with his progeny, you know?
Yeah.
But for me, I have to see the brilliance for me to really get excited about a stallion. I'll forgive a lot of other shortcomings in other people's eyes, i.e. possibly pedigree, physicality and those things, if they showed that brilliance at least one day at the track in the afternoon.
Yeah, you mentioned the stallion master thing, and of course John Secura is great at it. Governor Jones, Airdrie Stud, maybe the greatest stallion picker of all time. And his stallions are not in the super high-priced category. You know, a lot of value over there at Airdrie Stud.
There always is. You know, Governor Jones and Tim Thornton, and now with Governor's son Brett and the new guard Ben Henley, things look to carry on over there in the same path. You know, I think the new stallion from Bob's Barn over there collected looks very exciting. You know, Sunday City Zip, again, had the brilliance and shown it to you. So that's definitely a horse on our radar as well. And Upstart, you know, Governor Jones's and the Airdrie team's young stallion Upstart's weanlings have been very well received so far at the yearling sales. There's another horse, a son of Flatter, that had a lot of talent, that's being well received in the markets as well.
All right. Well, Stuart, thanks for some time this morning. We'll let you go enjoy your 5 hours off and spend time at the at the desk.
And guys, take
thanks
care.
For everything.
Thank you all for everything. You guys are the best out there in the game doing what you do, and we listen to you every time we have a chance. Thank you all for everything.
Thanks, Stuart.
Thanks, Stuart. We'll hear from Stuart later on, too. His Industry Star of the Week, presented by Stuart Morris, will come to you a little later on in this hour. Well, my man's got it covered, huh, Pontiff?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's a hardworking guy, loves the game, loves horses, you know, loves consigning them and getting them to good homes and seeing what they can do on the racetrack. He's a cool guy. Like Stuart a lot.
He's had a lot of success this year. We'll see if he has more success next year, and maybe you'll buy one from Stuart Morris, and that one will turn out to be a legend. Speaking of legends, it's time now for the Lexus Legend of the Turf, brought to you by the Lexus Store of Lexington.
This is the story of a man who was unquestionably one of the very best in the annals of thoroughbred racing at plying his trade in the saddle. His accomplishments as a reinsman were not only noteworthy, but they were watermarks among the riding colony on two continents. The sands of the racing hourglass are poured back to the late 19th century to begin this odyssey. The subject of this dissertation first saw the light of day in Cadentown, Kentucky in 1883. He rode his first winner in Chicago in 1899 on a horse called Abenstroke, and he subsequently rode in this country with unrivaled success until 1903. In 1901, he piloted the winner of the Kentucky Derby on a horse named, perhaps fittingly, His Eminence, and the winners of the Latonia Derby, New Orleans Derby, and the Memphis Derby. In point of fact, in his abbreviated American riding career, he had but 4 Kentucky Derby mounts, but never finished out of the money. He won that classic in back-to-back years aboard the aforementioned His Eminence, and in 1902 with Allen & Dale. He was 3rd while in the saddle aboard Thrive in 1900, and was 2nd aboard Early in 1903. He rode 161 winners in 1901, a total absolutely unheard of in that day and age. He often said the very best horse he ever rode was McChesney, a horse conditioned by Sam Hildreth. He eventually had a great deal of trouble making American riding weights and opted to cross the big pond, so to speak, to ride in Europe, and there he experienced measured success until 1930. He first rode in Russia, where he won the Russian Derby twice and finished 2nd in that event 4 times in 6 years while under contract to Mr. M. Lazarev. From 1910 to 1912, he rode in Austria-Hungary for Prince Lubomirski. He then returned to Russia, where he rode from 1913 to 1917. He won the Russian Derby 3 years in a row, 1914, 1915, and 1960, for Leon Montshev, who at the time was one of the wealthiest men in the country. Our man left Russia in 1917 at the inception of that nation's revolution being led by Messrs. Trotsky and Lenin. When he was to leave that country, he went to bid his friend what was to be a fond farewell. Many years later, in 1941, he learned that his friend and benefactor, Mr. Montachev, was washing cars at that time for the Nazis in Paris. The story of our subject's escape from Russia in 1917 would provide more than ample fodder for Jean Le Carre novel. Many times before escaping to Poland, he crawled on his hands and knees for hours to avoid being shot at by the Bolsheviks. In 1920, he left Warsaw for Paris, and he wound up there writing for Mr. Montachev until 1926. He wrote his last race in 1930 at the age of 47. Compositely, he wrote over 2,300 winners in this country and in Europe, and he once rode 8 winners out of 11 mounts in Moscow. The vast majority of his victories were scored aboard 2-year-olds because he always hustled them out of the gate, rated them, and then saved something for the finish. European riders, on the other hand, went hell-bent for leather throughout and had nothing left at the end. He always felt, although never able to explain why, that collectively, Australian riders were the best. Our man turned to training in France in the 1930s with horses in training at Maison Lafitte near Paris. When the Second World War broke out, he was forced to disband his stable and he turned his property over to the French government, which quartered 200 soldiers there. Then, after France's quick defeat, he was forced to quarter Nazi soldiers. On February 25, 1941, he began another portion of his international odyssey that brought him first to Spain, then to Portugal, and finally back to his native America. Having been in Europe for some time, he was fluent in French, German, and Russian, in addition to English. He passed away in 1941 at the nonagenarian age of 91, with not only fond memories of the turf on two continents, but with a cumulative riding record that by any measure, means, or standards has to rank among the all-time best. His story has the very fiber of what a legend of the world of racing is all about. He was Jimmy Wakefield.
Lexus, once driven, there's no going back. Through inspired design, relentless innovation, and uninhibited performance, Lexus continues their pursuit to perfection with not only precisely engineered automobiles, but powerful, profound, and passionate experiences that move you like never before. Hey everyone, Mike Pena here, and extremely proud to say that I am a Lexus owner, or better yet, a member of the Lexus family at the Lexus store of Lexington. I've told you for more than a decade that the people make the difference at the Lexus store, and that is why I am so proud to be their customer and a member of their family. If you're in the horse business, there's no reason to look anywhere else. As the sponsor of the Grade 2 Lexus Raven Run at Keeneland every fall, the team at the Lexus store of Lexington is committed to supporting the horse industry and to being the dealership of the equine industry here in Central Kentucky. See for yourself. Stop in and talk horse racing with the godfather, Tony Attiano, and all the great folks at the Lexus store of Lexington. And I promise you will love your Lexus experience.
Welcome to Jimmy John's.
Hi, your new 9-grain wheat sub is so good. How do you make it?
With the highest quality ingredients and love. I mean, we definitely don't sing at lullabies when it's baking. Lullabies are what parents sing to babies.
Right.
And we don't use a baby carrier to carry the warm, fresh 9-grain wheat subs to the cooling racks. I mean, they're not babies. They're for making delicious sandwiches.
Okay, I'll take a turkey tom.
Oh, don't name them. It makes it harder.
Try our new 9-grain wheat sub, Jimmy John's. Wheat, yeah, freak, yeah.
Since 1940, the National HBPA has provided thoroughbred horsemen with a unified voice, representing their interest and needs before state and federal governments and improving business conditions for thoroughbred horsemen and their employees. With a seat on the board of major industry organizations, the National HBPA continues to support more than 30,000 individual owners, trainers, breeders, and backstretch personnel throughout the United States and Canada. Contact CEO Eric Camelback to let your voice be heard and support the National HBPA by visiting hbpa.org.
Heard about the new 3E tractors from John Deere?
What's new?
New look, better maneuverability than those other color tractors, added conveniences like onboard diagnostics to make for an easier day, and all-around greater performance.
Well, sounds interesting.
They also have one of the lowest sticker prices in the industry.
Sounds like I'm in.
Just head to your John Deere dealer. I'm sure they'll take care of you.
Sounds like they already have.
Introducing the all-new 2018 John Deere 3E Series tractors. More functionality, same affordability.
When it comes to buying tractors, mowers, and farm equipment, look no further than locally owned Central Equipment on Red Mile Road in Lexington. A third-generation family business, Central Equipment has been servicing the equine industry for more than 46 years, working closely with the NTRA to ensure their equine clients get the best pricing on their new John Deere purchases. At Central Equipment, you'll find top brands like Exmark, Kubota, Still, John Deere, and Woods. Stop in today and experience the family-owned atmosphere or visit centralequipment.com.
This is Elliot Walden, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. This freaky fast performance is brought to you by your Lexington, Kentucky area Jimmy Johns.
And they come to the final furlong. Exaggerator is closing in. Nyquist to catch with a 16th to go. Gunrunner, Exaggerator on the outside. Nyquist and Exaggerator, they're coming to the line together. And Nyquist is still unbeaten. He has won the Kentucky Derby. Exaggerator was second, and then a photo for third among sudden breaking news. And Gunrunner, and the final time was swift. 2:01.31, set by a brilliant Nyquist.
Larry Comas on the call of the 2016 Kentucky Derby. Nyquist remained undefeated with that win in the Run for the Roses. Welcome back to the Equine Forum here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. The Big A and the Pontiff taking you through a sensational Saturday morning. One of the things, Jude, that Nyquist wore that day was his Flair equine nasal strip. As you're tight with Doug O'Neill, Doug, a big proponent of the nasal strips.
Yeah, Doug's been using them since their inception, basically, and obviously quite successful. Been the leading trainer in California several different times, and they seem to work. They are drug free. They are, an asset that you don't want to leave any stone unturned. And the jocks wear them. The horses might as well wear them.
Yeah, Doug, of course, trained two Kentucky Derby winners that wore those flare naval strips. I'll have another as well. Back in 2012, earlier this week, the Baron, Mike Pena, caught up with the co-inventor and president of Flair, Dr. Jim Chiappetta.
Dr. Jim Chiappetta is the co-founder of Flair Equine Nasal Strips. Their slogan: prevent, protect, perform. So let's talk about Flair, Doc. First of all, thanks for taking the time to be here.
Mike, great to see you again. It's great to be here at Churchill Downs. I'm not going to be here for the races, but always a great place to come and looking forward to it.
Yeah, we are surrounded by horsemen here on the backside of Churchill. We're in the barn area. It has to be kind of neat for you to walk around here and see horses that are all wearing those Flair strips. I know it's not all of them, but there's a lot of them.
There's a lot of them. It's a good opportunity to catch up with the trainers that do use it and make sure that things are working for them. Are they having any problems? Are there things we can do better? And then have the opportunity to talk to people that just want to know more about them. So this is the best place to be to really work with people with the strips.
All right, let's start with the basics. What exactly do the strips do?
Mike, I think in its simplest form, they help horses breathe easier and they protect their lungs. So if you think about the respiratory system of the horse, it's made up of the upper and the lower respiratory system. Everything from the nose down to the trachea is the upper respiratory system, and the lungs are the lower respiratory system. If you look at moving air through a horse's nose to get it into the lungs, the greatest resistance to getting air into the horse's lungs is in the upper airway. And of the upper airway, 50% of that resistance is due to the nasal passages. So what the strips do is they work at that part of the horse's upper airway where there's the greatest resistance. It's called the nasal valve. It just supports that tissue so that horses breathe easier.
So is that the reason that horses will do what they call in the business, they'll bleed? Is that the reason for that?
Well, bleeding is due to a lot of things. And resistance in the airway plays a very large component. There are, when a horse is running and they're moving at high speed, there's some incredible forces going on in the body. The two big ones are their blood pressure goes up, and they put an awful lot of pressure on small blood vessels in the lung. By the same token, they're drawing in a lot of air. And on the other side of that blood vessel that's filled with blood and a high blood pressure, you've got a very strong vacuum force on the other side. And the two together cause that blood vessel to rupture. But that's where the break occurs. But other things impact it. Concussion, we know, plays a role. The harder the surface is, we're going to see more bleeding. Age plays a role. Humidity plays a role. All of these things play a role. What Flair and Lasix are doing is working down on the blood vessel, the point source, if you will, of where bleeding occurs.
So are there other things that the Flair strips can help with in terms of keeping a horse healthy outside of bleeding?
Yeah. When we look at what happens with bringing air into a horse's lungs, the strips have been proven to make breathing easier. It's that simple. And because of that, it has a very big impact on reducing EIPH or lung bleeding. But in addition, horses are, they fatigue less, they conserve energy, and they recover quicker. So when you think about what we're trying to do with the airway, is we think about the throat, and we put tongue ties on, but you've got this tube that's bringing air from the nostril to the lungs. Anything that becomes an obstruction in that tube is going to make it more difficult for the horse to breathe. And when you think about how do we get the best performance out of these horses, we have to think a little bit like NASCAR. I don't believe that there's anything out there that's going to turn a 10,000 claimer into a stakes horse. But every horse should be tuned so they run the best they can, and it's marginal gains. What are those incremental things you can do to get the most performance out of every horse? And so people say to me, if I use a nasal strip, my horse is going to get more oxygen. They're not. The horse can only get so much oxygen, and it's limited by the size of their rib cage that allows the lungs to expand and the size of the heart, because the bigger the heart, the less room there are for lungs to take in air. So if we take that as the limiting factor, that is the lung size, then you have to think about, but how do we get that air in the lungs as efficient as possible? And that's why I say it's a marginal benefit. You tune that respiratory system to get the best air you can in there as efficiently as possible. You put the right shoes on. You have them on the right feeding program, the right training program, and all of these things together are going to make for great performances.
You've made tremendous strides over the past several years with getting the strips into different jurisdictions here in the United States, New York in particular, who never allowed the strips for a very long time. Now they do. How about in terms of internationally? Are the strips allowed to be used in Europe?
Yeah, it's interesting. In international competitions, three-day eventing, the Olympics, FEI, the strips are approved everywhere. They are not approved for racing in Europe. And it's been a constant discussion because they should be approved there. And I think the regulators believe they should be approved there. But we go back and forth, to be honest. I was in Europe quite a bit last year, and I'll probably be there quite a bit this year because I'd like to get them approved. As you know, they don't allow any drugs on race day, so Lasix isn't something that's allowed there, but the strips would provide a great benefit for bleeding. Over the years, I've really had several discussions, starting out with the discussion that European horses don't bleed. Well, we all know that can't be the case because they all come from the same bloodstock and they all do the same rigorous sport. There were questions about performance enhancement. I think it's pretty much borne out that performance enhancement is a relative thing. I mean, if you put a pair of blinkers on a horse, is that performance enhancing? People will argue with me that it's not performance enhancing. And so my immediate comment is, well, take them off. Why would you use them if they didn't help the horse run better? So it's not a performance enhancement issue. Some of it is they've come back and said, well, all your data is from the United States. We'd like data from the United Kingdom. What I'm learning talking with trainers is, number one, Lasix is used in the UK. It's used in Europe. It's not used on race day, but it is used in training. And I think the use of things to mitigate bleeding in training is a very wise thing to do, because the horse's lungs don't know if it's race day or work day. And so the goal is to always reduce any chance of bleeding every time you can to keep those lungs as healthy as possible. So we do see Lasix used in Europe on training days. The other thing I found working with European trainers is they are very, very knowledgeable about EIPH. And it may be because they can't use Lasix on race day, but what I learned is the records they keep, the frequency that they scope their horses, the frequency that they do lung washes, they are tracking and making sure those horses' lungs are as healthy as possible. And I think it's a great learning for the United States, because oftentimes when I talk to trainers here, they'll say, well, yeah, I have bleeders, but I use Lasix. It's not a panacea. There's an awful lot of data out there that Lasix on some horses doesn't work. The more often you use Lasix, the lower efficacy it has. So we have to look at it as holistically and think about all the things that come together to cause bleeding and what can we do to help mitigate it. And when I talk to trainers in the United States and I see them using tools to take the spores out of hay, using nebulizers to keep their lungs healthy, using certain nutritional supplements that are designed to help the lungs, that's what this is all about. And I see it happening very much in the UK. There's wisdom there, and I see more and more wisdom in the United States, too, as trainers realize it's not a silver bullet type situation. One shot, we're going to fix it. It's management of these animals the best we can to keep them as healthy as we can.
You mentioned the trips that you've made to Europe and the future trips that you're going to make, trying to get approval for the strips. What's that process involve in Europe in terms of getting them approved?
Well, I think therein lies the, you know, the million-dollar question. I have been invited by the British Horse Racing Authority. I speak with and spoke with the National Trainers Federation. I'm not sure if they've been banned so long, they're not sure what to do. I don't know that there is a process for bringing something new, which Flair is 20 years old now or close to it, but there's no established process for how we're going to look at things and say, should it be approved or shouldn't it be approved? So I think part of the hang-up is, what do we do here? We've had them banned so long, so do we just pivot? Or what do we do? So stay tuned, and I'll let you know if I learn the process. So other people that may bring tools to market to help horses don't go as gray as I have working on getting this product approved in Europe.
Visiting with Dr. Jim Chiappetta, who is the co-founder of Flair Equine Nasal Strips here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. As the co-founder, to see the progress that you've been able to make and the jurisdictions that the Flair strips are now allowed to be used, what's been the most rewarding part of this entire journey for you?
I think when we started the project, people thought we were crazy. That, what are you doing up here in the nose? They have a false nostril. They can't work. People didn't understand the anatomy up there. I think probably there are two very rewarding things. Is one, we are in the veterinary textbooks as a way to make breathing easier and a way to reduce bleeding. Flair strips are now in veterinary textbooks. And as a veterinarian who's always had a passion for my profession, to feel like we've contributed something is wonderful. The other thing is when I see the trainers that use the strips, that we've been allowed to be part of their team, that they've got these wonderful horses, they're great trainers, and they've invited us in and look at us as a tool to be part of their team at helping these horses perform and keeping them healthy. That's probably one of the greatest feelings anyone can have. So those two things are big in my mind.
Do you have one that'll fit this nose over here?
Mike, I think if we go in profile, I'll take you on nose to nose and we can come up with something to at least save our wives on the snoring department.
Doc, I appreciate the visit, and keep it rolling. All the best with Flair, and let's see it get done in Europe, too.
Mike, thanks for having me. A pleasure as always.
All right. That was Dr. Jim Chiappetta talking about his Flair nasal strips. We'll take a break, come back, and hear from the industry star of the week presented by Stuart Morris. And coming up in the 9 o'clock hour, Luis Saez won his 2000th race yesterday afternoon here at Aqueduct. He'll look back on the first 2000 and ahead to the next 2000. You're listening to the Equine Forum on HRN, your home for racing's biggest events.
Power.
Royal Delta, my Miss Aurelia, here is a champion again. Royal Delta has won the Breeders' Cup Ladies Classic.
Passion.
Pioneer of the Nile, fully stretched but keeping Chocolate Candy at bay. And Pioneer of the Nile and Garrett Gomez have won the Santa Anita Derby.
Performance.
She wins it. Emolliant for Mike Smith with a huge run in this grade one.
Empire Maker is back in the USA with his first crop of Gainsway sired yearlings selling up to $1.35 million and a Keeneland September book one average of $498,000. A champion on the racetrack, Empire Maker won both the Florida Derby and Belmont Stakes on his way to earning nearly $2 million. Now a highly influential sire with 11 Grade 1 winners, including Pioneer of the Nile and Bodemeister, along with four-time Grade 1 winner Emolliant and three-time Eclipse champion Royal Delta.
Power, passion, performance. You know I'm talking about Gainsway Farm.
Live racing returns to Mahoning Valley Racecourse on Friday, October 26th. Our regular schedule features racing Monday through Wednesday at 12:45 Eastern and Saturday starting at 12:15. Be sure to join us Monday, November 19th for the meet signature event, the $250,000 Steel Valley Sprint for three-year-olds at six furlongs, plus the co-feature $75,000 Mahoning Valley Distaff for fillies and mares. It's all at Mahoning Valley Racecourse. Visit us online at HollywoodMahoningValley.com.
Bloom Racing.
Sky Diamonds takes the lead. Sky Diamonds to win, going away.
Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Midnight Bizou with another assertive final furlong. The top filly of the meet deservedly wins the Grade 1 Santa Anita Oaks.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now, get in on the action at bloomracing.com.
Airdrie Stud is proud to introduce McCracken for the 2019 breeding season. A brilliantly talented son of the great Ghost Sapper, McCracken recorded a dominant, undefeated two-year-old campaign, culminating with a sensational win in the Grade 2 Kentucky Jockey Club. A multiple graded stakes winner and track record setter at three, McCracken retires as the only two-year-old graded stakes winning colt by his elite sire, Ghost Sapper. Beautifully balanced from a deep female family, McCracken has everything it takes to be an important sire. Airdrie Stud's McCracken. Think about it.
The Holiday Racing Festival at Penn National Racecourse is Wednesday, November 21st, featuring the $200,000 Fabulous Strike Stakes, the $100,000 Swatera Stakes, and the $100,000 Blue Mountain Stakes. All three stakes races will be part of the Early Pick 4. The Holiday Racing Festival at Penn National Racecourse, Wednesday, November 21st, first post time at 6 p.m. Eastern. For more information, visit HollywoodPNRC.com.
This is Bob Baffert, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Top of the stretch, Jack Van Berg is still in front. Jack Van Berg, the one to catch down to the final furlong. Gray Attempt's been trying hard to get by, but is still second. Straight shot on the outside, Captain Von Trapp at the rail, 100 yards to go. Jack Van Berg keeps on going. Jack Van Berg, two lengths lead. Straight shot, Captain Von Trapp chasing Jack Van Berg, who wins by 2.5. Captain Von Trapp might have gone second. Straight shot right there. Gray Attempt was fourth.
Breeders' Cup Friday saw Jack Van Berg break his maiden at first asking beneath the Twin Spires. His namesake won quite a few races in the bluegrass. He was trained by Jack's son, Tom. Heard from Tom this week. Mike Penner and Jude Feld had a fantastic trainer talk presented by Fasig Tipton on Wednesday. You got to sit down for the whole hour with Tom, Jude.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Known Tom a long time. His father was stabled across from me at San Anita for many years, and Jack and I got to be friends, and, you know, his sons were the apple of his eye. His son, Tim, and his son, Tom, Those guys, they grew up at the barn, and it was really a great time to sit down and have a chat, talk about Jack and all the cool things that came along with winning with a horse named Jack Vanberg, the first race of Breeders' Cup Friday.
Yeah, he won two that day, and that was enough to get Tom Vanberg named the Industry Star of the Week, presented by Stuart Morris.
That moment last Friday, race two, before the Breeders' Cup races got started, 30 years after your dad saddled Ali Sheba to win that memorable Breeders' Cup Classic on that very same racetrack, what a moment that had to be for you and for your family.
Yeah, it was extremely emotional, and to top it off, I had all my extended family and my cousins, and my sisters were in, and it was just unbelievable. I mean, just even the opportunity to be put in that position with, you know, Mike Waters. It was Mike Waters' horse, and Mike Puich put a great foundation out at Emerald Downs and run a couple races to get him ready for Churchill, and then at the sale they bought the horse with Christina Gelm. I think there's a lot of their bloodstock work, and just the whole team came together, and then Mike Waters to approach Dad to name a horse after him. And, you know, Billy Gownoff, you know, Billy, he's a good friend of Dad's, but he was with Dad when Mike asked him to name the horse after him. And is in pure, you know, JVB fashion, he's like, well, it better be a GD good one if you're gonna name one after me. And so, you know, that came out, and it was really unbelievable to be, you know, especially the timing. You know, I knew the horse was training well. We weren't actually even planning on going in that day. I looked at all the race on Sunday, and the races weren't that outstanding with the types of numbers those horses were running. And I thought, well, if that's what we're going to get, maybe Breeders' Cup Day. We breezed him on Monday, and he breezed really good. I knew they were high on him from the beginning. And we breezed him, you know, here, and he didn't show me much until that Monday before, and he breezed really good and came out of it great. And I kind of saw what they were talking about, and so I approached Mike Waters about it and said, you know, what do you think? You know, you want to come back for this, and you want to try and make it in? If you can, if it's the right field, we'll try to go for it. And then we entered, and then I saw, you know, Asmussen's horse in there and Ian Wilkes' horse in there, and both first time out, they ran pretty solid races, and it got me, you know, questioning my decision-making process. I thought I might have to change my mind a little bit, but Mike had made the call of already getting the flight in, and I said, well, you know, we take a shot, we get him, you know, maybe one more start at Churchill, and the ultimate goal being Oaklawn Park, because Mike loves run down Oaklawn too. And so we decided to roll the dice and see. And I really thought going into it, I thought we'd be, you know, third or fourth. I thought those two horses were just, at this point, having a race under their belt. I thought they ran legitimate enough races that we would have a tough time overcoming it first time. And then things just kind of, everything went right. He broke so sharp. I mean, he broke a length in front before. I don't know if Dad delayed the other gates or opened his a little bit early, but it was just, I've had horrible luck with breaks, you know, the last meet. And for him to break like that was just, you know, and then nobody really go with him. But then, you know, Jinx's horse came up around the turn and started kind of pressuring him a little bit. It was, I think we can get this if he doesn't press us too fast. And I thought the 21 and change, I'm like, well, maybe we are too fast watching the first race. And it just, everything kind of just played out. And then, you know, I asked John after the fact why he didn't ride Jinx's, because he rides everything for Jinx, you know, and he just happened to become available. And apparently that owner wanted to try another ride or something, and it didn't want John on that horse. And so I think John had a little extra motivation on top of it. And so, you know, it was just one of those things that everything came together. It couldn't have come together any more perfectly. And some days you get those days, and some days it's the exact opposite. So it was just fortunate that was the day it was on, and with the horse that it was with.
It was so awesome. I was glad we weren't on the air, because I'm notorious for crying on the air. But it was just an amazing way to start the whole Breeders' Cup. I thought it really added a lot to the day.
Yeah, it really did. And I didn't understand kind of the effect that it would have on people until I started getting the texts. And I don't think I've had 100 texts in a month, and it just started scrolling text after text of people that I hadn't talked to in a long time, you know, congratulations. And it was amazing. And we bet on him, and you know, how could we miss Jack Vanberg running? And, you know, and then on top of when I went to get the photos to give to Mike and the crew and all that. And Curtis comes out, Curtis Cody, and says, Tom, he said, we're sold out. I have to print some more for you. Wow. People were just coming in, they're buying pictures off the race already, trying to combine that picture, you know? So it was just, you know, it's one of those storybook tales. I mean, just like when we, you know, first started Profound Moment down at Oaklawn, won our first start out when we took over the stable, it was just, You don't get those days very often in this business. You really don't. I mean, some people may. We don't. I don't, you know, so it was pretty special.
Jude Industry Star of the Week, presented by Stuart Morris. We've been talking about it a lot this week, Jude. Like Tom just said, those are the days that really make it all worth it in this game.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of surreal. It was an amazing thing to have happen. And when you listen to the actual story, it was all kind of happenstance that it came about. But it was so fitting and it just really, I think it set the tone for the 2 days. It was a magnificent Breeders' Cup. One of the best that I've ever been to. I really enjoyed it. And, it was a great couple of days.
Well, we had a great first hour here on the Equine Forum. Coming up in hour number two, we have Louis Saez, Lacey Gaudette, and Ron Anderson. Hour two comes up in just a minute right now. We'll be back with hour number two after we pause 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
It is Justify in front. Good Magic on the outside tenfold. Bravazo, Justify, he's unstoppable. He won the Preakness.
It's Game Winner coming past the eighth pole, extending his advantage to more than a length over Rowayton. Gunmetal Grey is next. Game Winner. He's a habitual winner. He's the undefeated winner of the American Pharaoh.
From our Jimmy Johns of Lexington studios, welcome to the Equine Forum.
Pavlik Boy is pulling away. He's so impressive today, the others didn't even have a prayer. Pavlik Boy rolls in the run. Happy Travers. Justify from Gronkowski. He's just perfect. And now he's just immortal. Justify is the 13th Triple Crown winner.
Now here's Anthony Stabile and Jude Feld.
Welcome back to hour number two of the Equine Forum here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. I'm the Big A, Anthony Stabile, filling in for the vacationing Mike Penna. I'm up at the Big A Aqueduct Racetrack, where it is partly sunny, a little windy, off the turf here at Aqueduct for both stakes today. The whole card's off the turf, but the Atlantic Beach and the Artie Schiller are off the turf. Down our Jimmy Johns of Lexington Broadcast Studios is the Pontiff of the Pick Four, Jude Feld, thanks to Stuart Morris and Dr. Jim Chiappetta taking some time out of their schedules for hour number one. Lacey Gaudette and Ron Anderson are going to join us in hour two. We're efforting to get Louis Saez. Louis had a pretty historic day in his career yesterday. Win number 2,000 above Y'all Come Now here at the Big A in race number four. Wish I had a buck for every milestone I've seen at these Naira tracks, Jude.
Yeah, they pop up now and again, but that was great for Louis, and he's such a talented rider, and you and I are often calling it to fans' attention when he gets on a horse that needs a more aggressive ride or a more thoughtful ride, and I was happy for him.
Always seems to be in the right place. I say this all the time to people when he retires, and I hope it's a long way off, but when he retires, he'll probably make a good horse player, because you feel like he's doing the work and looking at the PPs, because he always seems to be taking that little extra edge. If there's no pace in a race, he'll try and be a little bit more aggressive and steal it on the front end. If there's plenty of pace in the race and he's on a speedy type, he'll do what he can to get that horse off the pace and maybe take advantage of the others knocking heads in front of him. And you can't do that. You can't be that lucky all the time is basically what I'm trying to say. You got to be putting the work in.
Yeah, no question about it. I think we're both in agreement that he's a handicapper, and a lot of the jocks that are handicappers seem to do better. They have a better plan B's, C's, and D's. Everybody's got a good plan A, but the B's, C's, and D's, where most of the races are won, the jocks that actually do, you know, read the form and have a semblance of idea of how the race may take shape seem to be the ones that excel, and he's one of those guys.
Yeah, Mike Tyson said it best. Everybody has a plan until you get punched in the face, right?
That's right. Welcome to horse racing.
Yeah, I mean, no truth to me. No truer thing has ever been said. And, you know, you talk to all these guys. Johnny V, I guess most famously. What does he have, Plan Z?
Yeah, he's got them all. He ran out of alphabet.
Johnny has Plan Z, right? So important to be prepared out there. And like I said, you know, Louis, certainly the look of a guy that goes out there and he's prepared. And you know, it's you just can't stress how important it is. You know, when I get into one of my moods or I fully admit I can be moody, but when I get into one of my moods or you see something you don't like to see, you know, I'll say, why does everybody have to play ping pong or play pool in the jocks room? Because most jocks rooms have it. When I went to get the interview with Louis yesterday, he was actually shooting pool, and it kind of blew my mind a little bit. But, you know, he was just trying to unwind, and he had plenty of people come over and congratulating him and stuff. And, you know, he even said to me something like, normally this isn't me, but just trying to take it all in and relax a little bit. And, you know, we've seen it. We've seen a Rod get to 2,000, Rod Ortiz Jr. We've seen Manny Franco get to 1,000. We see Louis get to 2,000. Is it me, Judah? Does it seem like these guys are getting to these milestones a lot earlier than they used to?
Well, yeah, I think because there's more racing in general. You know, meets used to be shorter, and it took a long time to get to some of these milestones. But these guys that are sharp and are riding, you know, 6-7 horses a day every day, and they're never without a racetrack, and they don't mind getting on a plane and riding on, you know, Monday or Tuesday. You know, they'll go wherever to ride if it comes up. So not a surprise.
And now, nice enough to join us, taking some time out of a busy morning, the newest member of the 2000 Win Club, Louis Saez. Louis, it's Anthony and Jude here on the Equine Forum. Thanks for some time this morning, and, of course, congratulations.
Thank you so much. Thank you for the interview. I'm fine.
You know, when I came downstairs and saw you yesterday, you had a smile on your face from ear to ear. Tell us what it was like to win number 2000 yesterday.
Yeah, you know, it was pretty exciting, man. That was a, you know, hard work. We was, you know, working pretty hard every day and try to, you know, win much we can and do all, you know, all the best. And thanks, guys. You know, we had 2,000 winner yesterday and we got to keep working hard.
Yeah, no question. Did the pressure didn't seem to get to you? You see guys getting close to a milestone, and man, they can't win a race, and it starts to weigh on them. But you just seem to like go bull your way right through it. Was it like that for you?
Yeah, you know, it was not pressure. I always try to be like kind, and I don't think too much, because when you worry too much, then you know you can't do it. So that's what I feel. So I just, you know, try to be normal and they happen, you know?
Yeah, that's the best way, I think. Just go about your day like you always do, because you're tremendously successful. The late Bobby Frankel, if he still was alive in training, he would use you all the time. You would be his favorite jockey, I think, because of the way that you ride. And you know where you are on the racetrack all the time. Do you do a lot of preparation?
Yeah, I work out in my house. Before the races, I try to, like, you know, see the replays, see the horse, how they run, how is the best way to, you know, to get in the race and yeah, and sometimes work, you know, and sometimes it's not like how we want, but but you know, I feel so proud for the horses to, you know, to when they win a race, you know, it's something very special for me.
You read the form a lot, Louis?
Yeah, I read the form a lot.
Yeah, I always tell people, I think, I don't know you that well that way, but I always tell people, you're probably going to make a good handicapper when you retire one day a long time from now.
Yeah, I hope so. Yeah, let's see. We never know.
This is going to be your fourth consecutive year with over 200 wins. You came up to New York full-time in 2013. I can't believe you've been here on a regular basis now for 5 years. And in that 5 years, right around 1,000 of those wins. Does it make it more special to do it here and at Gulfstream, you know, against these tough, tough colonies?
Yes, man, it's very special for me because, you know, it's not easy. It's pretty tough. And doing a lot of competition and, you know, special here in New York, you know, a lot of good riders, man. It's not easy. Wow, it's so special for me. It was so much special.
Who are some of the guys you ride with and against that that you admire and look up to?
Like jockeys?
Yes.
Well, man, Cornelio Velasquez, he retired right now, but he was one of my favorite jockeys. He helped, you know, he teach me a lot of stuff, and I always be close to him, and, you know, I always talk to him too. Lafitte Pinkay was my favorite jockey too. I was very close to my brother too, you know. And I don't know, Castellano and Johnny, pretty good riders. And I feel very, you know, proud to be riding with those guys. You know, it's you know, top jockeys, something special for me.
Would you ever imagine when you were younger get 2,000 wins in your career?
No, I never imagined that.
Can you imagine 3,000?
Well, now, yes, I can imagine. You know, we got to keep working hard and see, you know, see what happens. Hopefully.
Yeah, and you know, Lou, you did it in a day and age where a lot of guys are associated, a lot of jockeys, a lot of guys and gals are associated with one barn. You've pretty much done it without having one major barn in your corner. You kind of ride for everyone.
Yes, that's a good, you know, that's pretty tough. We work for everybody. We ride for everybody. We try to win for, man, everybody. You know, Brock, Yochar, Top, they give me a lot of opportunities. I feel very, you know, very proud. I always give a thanks to all these guys and, you know, everybody, but they help me a lot, you know. And that's something very special for me. I just give a thanks, you know. Thanks for everything.
Talk about your agent, Richard DePass, a little bit.
Oh, Richie, man, he's a hard worker. He works a lot. He's very sharp. He always wanna, you know, keep working every day, every morning. He called me to work in horses, galloping horses too. And man, we're working pretty hard. We gotta do it, you know. And he's a very nice guy, very nice guy. I never see him like knocking somebody, you know. he's pretty honest guy, man. And man, I love him like he was my family, you know.
Yeah, well, congratulations, Louis. Great job on the first 2,000. Here's to the next 2,000. Good luck today, and we'll talk to you soon.
Hey, Anthony, man, I appreciate it, and thank you so much for this interview, and God bless everybody. Thank you, guys. Thank you so much.
You got it, Louis. Louis Saez, newest member of the 2,000 Win Club. Such a good guy, dude.
Yeah.
For a guy with the success he's had, always very level-headed, always very nice and polite and pleasant to be around. Just a real good, you know, I call him a kid, but, you know, just a real good guy.
Yeah, he's very, very humble, too. He doesn't, you know, say how great he is or the horse has won because of him. I thought it was really telling what he said, that he feels so happy for the horses when they win. And I think a lot of people don't recognize that the jocks love the fact that they're putting that particular horse that they ride in the spotlight when they hit the winner's circle. And it's a big part of the game.
It's good to see, too, for the most part, guys like him and Manny Franco and Gerardo Ortiz Jr. They've had all of this tremendous success, really the toughest place in the world to win, and they haven't let it get to their heads. You know, Louis is even keeled as the day he walked into the room full-time 5 years ago. And, you know, he made a big splash on the scene. He had Will Take Charge that year, and he won the Travers and just missed in the Breeders' Cup Classic. So he was the kind of guy where he was winning. I think that I just had the numbers up on Equibase. I think he won 500 races. Where did the numbers go? Yeah, he won in 2011 and 2012, riding predominantly at Gulfstream Park and Gulfstream Park West. He won 517 races in 2011 and 2012. It's hard to leave that and take that leap of faith, if you will. But he's been rewarded by coming here, and in 5 years, he's won 1,000 races, and, you know, making the move from New York to Gulfstream every year.
Yeah, well, it's all those young guys, you know, they have to eventually – you know, step up. And you mentioned Manny Franco, who's riding fantastically. Louis doing great. The Ortiz brothers. And they all have the same humbleness about them. And I think we kind of owe that to Johnny V and Javier, because those guys, they all say the same thing, that they're honored to ride with those two men, and they look up to them. Everyone that you mentioned, and so it keeps them humble, because they know they're not there yet. They're getting closer by the day, and you know, the two guys at the top are getting closer to retiring every day. So
yep.
You know, eventually they're going to take over, but because they're still there and riding at the absolute highest level, it keeps these guys a little bit hungry and you know, polishing their craft, if you want to say it that way, so that, you know, when the time comes, they're going to be ready to pounce and become the next John Velasquez, the next Javier Castellano.
Yeah, pleasure to see these guys develop, and then great to see Louis win number 2,000 here at Aqueduct yesterday afternoon. All right, it's time now for the Bloodhorse News Update and a look at the top headlines from Bloodhorse.com. Speaking of Louis Saez, his Derby horse Magnum Moon still recovering at Cornell Ruffian. 4.5 months after he sustained a career-ending injury during a training session at Belmont Park, Grade 1 Arkansas Derby winner Magnum Moon is still going through the recovery process at Cornell Ruffian Equine Specialist, according to Jacob West, the bloodstock agent and racing manager for owners Robert and Luana Lowe. In June, West said Magnum Moon sustained a structural injury to one of his front legs, and the colt has been housed at Cornell Ruffian, which is across the street from Belmont, since his injury. He's just stable at this point in time, West said. As I said back in June, we've got a million hurdles to jump, and he's jumping them. He's doing his part, and the vets at Cornell are doing their part. They've been amazing. What comes next for the Malibu Moon colt, should he recover fully, is not clear. It's doubtful he'll be ready for the 2019 breeding season, but the target of a stallion career is still a long-term goal. That wraps up this morning's edition of the Bloodhorse News Update. There is one go-to website for the thoroughbred industry, It's for racing, breeding, sales, and news, and that's BloodHorse.com. From breaking news to sire lists, results, and videos, leading earner lists, the industry stallion register, and so much more, you'll find it all at BloodHorse.com. All right, let's take a break, Pontiff. When we come back, Lacey Gaudette, she's on some roll down at Laurel. She's got Tour de Force in the Richard W. Small, as well as a couple of others on the Saturday Laurel card. She'll join us in just a few minutes. You're listening to the Equine Forum here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
He's as well-bred as horses get. As a son of Dinah Farmer, we see Temple City following that same path.
Archegalos has got it won. The Grey Stakes to Archegalos and scores too late.
Annals of Time just blew past him, and Annals of Time a striking win.
Miss Temple City, Ironica's charging. Miss Temple City.
The start that he's gotten off to has just been spectacular. We're really excited about the future.
Temple City, now standing at Spindthrift Farm.
When it's time to paint the fences and barns, think Farm Paint. At Farm Paint, you get the industry's best coatings and paints factory direct at low, low prices. Farm Paint is your source for quality paints, roof coatings, dustless arena footings, and more. You can purchase online or drop into a Farm Paint store near you with locations in Heart of Bluegrass Country at 700 Phillips Lane in Lexington, Kentucky, Columbus, Ohio, and Sandusky, Ohio. Buy factory direct and save at farmpaint.com. That's farmpaint.com.
I'm visiting with Joe Brown Nicholson of Nicholson Insurance Agency. Joe, how are things in the insurance world?
Things are just fine in the insurance business, Mike. I'm grateful for the people who place their trust in Nicholson Insurance Agency to protect their homes, autos, farms, and horses against financial loss. As you know, we represent many insurance companies, so we can choose just the right company for each client at the right price. We welcome each opportunity to provide quality service to our clients.
So having many companies seems important.
Absolutely. Just like in thoroughbred racing and breeding, competition also works for the betterment of the insurance industry. I am constantly impressed with the ways companies respond to consumer demands with new insurance products and services.
Thanks, Joe. For your equine and general insurance needs, call Nicholson Insurance Agency at 859-224-7080. Or visit us on Facebook. You gotta know Joe.
In Kentucky, our biggest celebrities have four legs, and thanks to Kentucky Proud Horse Country, you can now have unprecedented access to these equine stars. From foaling barn to finish line and beyond, you can see it all. Log on to visithorsecountry.com to book your one-of-a-kind experience. With more than 30 horse country locations throughout the Bluegrass, you'll get access to multi-million dollar farms and facilities featuring Kentucky Derby and Triple Crown winners, famous broodmares, and champion sires. Space is limited, so book now at visithorsecountry.com.
Castleton Lions is home to blue blood sprinter Justin Phillip and multiple Eclipse champion Gio Ponti. Justin Phillip is represented in 2018 by the exciting stakes winning filly Safe to Say and stakes placed runners Justaholic, Blushing Justine, and Upset Brewing. While seven-time Grade 1 winner Gio Ponti has produced Eclipse champion and Breeders' Cup sprint winner Dre Fong, along with Canadian classic hero Sir Dudley Diggs and Miss Technicality, winner of the Juvenile Filly Stakes at Kentucky Downs. Justin Phillip and Gio Ponti at Castleton Lions.
This is jockey Julien Lepau, and you're listening to HRRN.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
They're at the top of the stretch now, and it's Tour de Force on the outside, coloring Saratoga Jack. Even Thunder is just in behind them in third, switching to the far outside. Top of Mind lingers to the center of the track. Here's Tour de Force. Tour de Force powering away. Tour de Force with Even Thunder on a game chase. Tour de Force with Even Thunder. Tour de Force and Johan Rosado. Tour de Force to score by two at the finish from Even Thunder second. Saratoga Jack and Marengo Road at Top of Mind.
Tour de Force. That was Dave Rodman on the call down at Laurel. He was taking a three of the end optional claimer. He will try his hand today in the Richard W. Small. Welcome back to the Equine Forum here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. I'm the Big A, Anthony Stabile, filling in for the vacationing Mike Penna. Pontiff of the Pick Four, Jude Feld, joining me as well. Nice enough to be joined now by trainer Lacey Gaudette, who's having herself not only a fantastic fall meet down at Laurel, but a career year. She's got three in today, including Tour de Force, in that Richard W. Small. Lazy, it's Anthony and Jude here on the Equine Forum. Thanks for some time this morning.
Hi, guys. Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Anytime. Boy, you've been on fire. I should have called you on Wednesday. You've been on fire down in Laurel the last few days.
We have. It's been a very nice fall meet. We're thrilled.
Talk about Team Gaudette this year and what a fantastic year it's been for you guys.
It's been fabulous. You know, this the whole, I guess, revamping of the, you know, of the team effort here started a couple of years ago, and it's had its ups and downs, but it's definitely moving in the direction that we want to, and we're so lucky to be able to add some people on and some really, really nice stock to the barn, and it's really, really been a fun ride so far.
Yeah, by far the best year in wins. You're well over $1.3 million in earnings. Hopefully get to $1.5 million. Just been a great year overall. Mom Linda obviously still helping out. Talk about that dynamic. Mother, you know, we see fathers and sons around here. We don't see a lot of mother-daughter combinations around here.
No, that's right. And it's just as tough. You know, she was the boss for a long time with my dad, so it wasn't easy transitioning to kind of me making the final call and definitely having her backing with everything and having her support. And we could not be able to do this without her. I mean, she definitely is, you know, as she was for my dad with his entire career, she is the backbone of the operation. And you know, it makes it a lot easier to know that you have somebody in somebody who's just as much invested in the operation. I mean, you know, there's very few trainers out there that are lucky enough to have assistants that are die hard for them and really honest and work just as hard as the trainer does. And it's been a big help that, that my mom is there with us the whole way.
She's got to be loving it too. I mean, it's so cool that you guys are doing it together. She has to be loving that.
Hey, why wouldn't she love it? She was in Saratoga all summer with six or seven. She was up there living the life. We were down here.
Oh, with, now you sound like a trainer. You sound like a trainer now.
Yeah.
I work so hard. My assistants have all the fun.
Yeah, I think I made it to Saratoga like two or three days this year. She said, all right, it's time for you to get back down here with the larger string and the farm and everything, and her get back up there to the good place. But yeah, no, she's really enjoying it. I mean, she always had a great ride with my dad, and it slowed down for a couple of years, you know, with him getting sick and kind of backing out of the game for a little bit. But it's really nice to be able to do this together.
So talk about this horse you've got in the small stakes. I mean, private purchase, right? Or auction purchase.
July sale.
Yeah.
Yeah, July sale.
His form was hideous, and you took a shot with him, you know, didn't pay a lot of money for him, and you turned him around instantaneously. Talk about him a minute.
Well, he was definitely cut out and bred to be a nice horse. I mean, he was an extremely high yearling purchase, and we've kind of always followed his career a little bit. You know, there was a lot of hype about him as a two-year-old, and my mom looked at him at the sale. She did the sale all on her own. I stayed here, and she liked him out there. Really did not think that he was going to go in our price range. I definitely thought that he'd, you know, go for a little bit more than that. And I mean, 25 was a great price. We thought that he'd really fit well here in Maryland, and he's done great in the barn. I mean, he really just fit right in like an old pro. He is the most beautiful horse that you may ever see. Definitely the biggest and most beautiful thoroughbred. I mean, he's just a standout. Everybody notices him on the racetrack. And he's just been wonderful to have in the barn. And it's even better that his form is coming along with it.
Yeah, it's cool. Plus, he's still an entire horse. So you could get lucky, really lucky.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think that when you get a horse like this, you maybe think that, it'd be a nice change of pace if maybe he was a gelding or something like that, but he really, I mean, he's a gentleman in the barn to be around, so there was really no need to change anything with him. And if we get lucky and could get a couple of stakes races around here, I think he could definitely have some regional stallion potential and be a nice horse.
Hold on a second. Mom went to this sale and got a half-brother to Majestic Warrior intact for a quarter.
Yeah.
She should be wearing a mask.
She deserves the summer in Saratoga, Lacey. No offense.
She does. She definitely does.
Talking with Lacey Gaudette. Team Gaudette on fire, winning at over 35% down at Laurel right now. They got three in today, including one of their newest acquisitions, Tour de Force, in the Richard W. Small. Jude mentioned how this, almost like a reclamation project, he's really turned it around. Talk about the run you've been on. Two on Thursday, one yesterday, one last Sunday, I believe. Four of your last five down at Laurel.
We try not to count backwards. We just keep looking forward, and it's been fun. I mean, we had a lot of horses that were eligible for these starter conditions down here as the non-2, non-3 starters for 25. So that definitely helps you pick up a few more places there. But we've had some nice horses come to the barn, a few that we claimed out of Saratoga that have just been wonderful down here and have really flourished, maybe being here and not shipping. And Sheik of Sheik's ran amazing the other day, and he's another one that was cut out to be a nice horse. And we did a good job, I think, of trying to get some better horses and some better clients into the barn, and it's really helped. And the clients have been great as far as definitely letting us take time with some of these horses. You know, a couple of the fillies that have been running really big, they came into the barn, and where you'd be looking for a spot, I said, hey, guys, let's just get these horses right. And they were very, very patient with a few of these horses to let us put the time in and get them right. And they're definitely reaping the benefits from it.
You mentioned how you've mentioned numerous times in the interview how it's a team effort over there. You lost a big part of the team towards the end of last year, late last year, when your dad, Eddie, passed away. Talk about what it's been like without having him around. I mean, obviously, he's still there in spirit, and got to be awful proud of how well you guys are doing down at Laurel this year.
Yeah, it was, it's always – he always did pat my back, and he always pushed me to look at life in a different way than I usually do, which is, a little aggressive. And since his passing, I don't know if it's maybe that he's doing a little better job of getting into my ear now that he's in the spirit, but, we've really taken a step back and relaxed and just look at the bigger picture. And, with any job that you do, you have to have fun. And that's really what we do. And he always did. Everybody that knows my dad knows that he was a practical joker, but he still got the job done. And, he had a fantastic career. And there's days that I definitely wish he was standing in the winner's circle next to me with his arm around me like he did for so many years. But I know he's here watching, and I do. I mean, that's, at the end of the day, my most important thing is to definitely, especially my mom, she's here watching it, but, to make sure that I keep my dad proud, because, he would have loved to be here and see this, but I know he's appreciative of all of his words coming to fruition and doing a job well done with both of his daughters, which was me and my sister.
Yeah. Gabby was really excited. Gabby was going to come over by me for Thanksgiving last year, and a few days later she was so pumped that your mom and dad made the trip up to spend Thanksgiving with her. And again, along with that team, I don't think people realize you're only 29 years old, but you took your license out at a very young age. When I was doing my research this morning, I can't believe you have starters listed back all the way down back in 2007. So what were you, 18 when you took your trainer's license out?
Yeah, I think I was 17 when I went to take my trainer's license the Pimlico meet in the spring. And passed it pretty well, might I add. And it's a tough test here. It's a very, very long and intense test. So it was quite daunting. But and then we had Colonial Downs in the summer then, and that was the main goal, was for my dad to send me down there. And I think we ended up taking probably about 7 or 8. By the time we claimed a few or got a few from some other owners that wanted to be down there, I think we ended up having a string of like 15 to 18. And I think we won a few races down there. So won my first race down there at that meet. And I remember the most upsetting thing about it was we had, I'd have to go back and look at the record, but it was – a ridiculous amount of seconds down there. And, you know, you're running at Colonial Downs and 14 horse fields, and there's a lot of traffic, you know, so they were getting a little traffic trouble and just getting beat. And then of course we come up here and everything goes back in my dad's name in the fall. And I think he probably had a fall like we're having right now, where they just unloaded when they got back up here. And I, you know, it really, really put me a step back. I said, all right, well, my time will come, but you know, at least we had him prepared. So.
Yeah. Charlie Whittingham always used to say the seconds turn into wins. And in your case, it absolutely happened.
Exactly. I mean, this fall, even, you know, we had the Timonium meet and we won, I don't know, maybe one or two over there, and but some really big game efforts and a lot of really nice seconds and thirds. And, you know, we were a little upset that those seconds weren't wins. And I said, hey, this is a tough track to be at. Look, they're all, you know, they're all ready to rock and roll after we got back under one roof after Saratoga. And I said, we're going to have a really good fall because of where these horses are set up to run next. And they sure have.
Well, continue the hot hand down in the Mid-Atlantic. We'll see you when you ship up to the Big A one of these days in the winter.
Yes. We'll be up there.
Thanks for some time this morning, Lacey.
All right, guys. Great talking to you. Have a good one.
All right, Lacey Gaudette. She has Tour de Force in the Richard W. Small later on today at Laurel. We'll take a break. When we come back, jockey agent extraordinaire Ron Anderson joins us to talk about his client Joel Rosario and his 3 Breeders' Cup Championship wins. You're listening to the Equine Forum here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for all of racing's biggest events.
Lexus. Once driven, there's no going back. Through inspired design, relentless innovation, and uninhibited performance, Lexus continues their pursuit to perfection with not only precisely engineered automobiles, but powerful, profound, and passionate experiences that move you like never before. Hey everyone, Mike Pena here, and extremely proud to say that I am a Lexus owner, or better yet, a member of the Lexus family at the Lexus store of Lexington. I've told you for more than a decade that the people make the difference at the Lexus store, and that is why I am so proud to be their customer and a member of their family. If you're in the horse business, there's no reason to look anywhere else. As the sponsor of the Grade 2 Lexus Raven Run at Keeneland every fall, the team at the Lexus store of Lexington is committed to supporting the horse industry and to being the dealership of the equine industry here in Central Kentucky. See for yourself. Stop in and talk horse racing with the godfather, Tony Attiano, and all the great folks at the Lexus store of Lexington. And I promise you will love your Lexus experience.
This 3-time Breeders' Stakes winning millionaire defeated 20 Grade 1 winners. In the Dixie Stakes, he defeated Canadian champion and horse of the year Up with the Birds and set a new course record at Saratoga. Now the excitement is building as his first foals have arrived this year. Half to 4 graded stakes winners, Ironicus, has the speed, class, and bloodlines to become the next great sire by Distorted Human. Ironicus, standing at Claiborne Farm.
Tune in to HRRN to catch all the racing action on Thanksgiving Eve, Wednesday, November 21st, with the 6th edition of the Land of Enchantment Day live from Zia Park Casino Hotel and Racetrack. 7 Thoroughbred Stakes will be on tap worth $1 million, highlighted by the $250,000 Zia Park Derby, the $250,000 Zia Park Oaks, and the $150,000 Zia Park Championship Stakes. Nominations are free to all Land of Enchantment Day stakes races and close Tuesday, November 6th. For more information, go to ZiaParkCasino.com.
It's time now to shine the spotlight on the Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week.
But it's Rocketry the leader. Dabster battles on, but Dabster second. Big Dollar Bill is third. 100 yards to go. Rocketry, Dabster, not done yet. Here comes Dabster, but Rocketry holds on.
Rocketry, the 4-year-old son of Darley stallion Hard Spun, earned his first graded stakes victory in the Grade 2 Marathon Stakes at Churchill Downs this past weekend. Rocketry earned a 100 buyer speed figure in that performance, his second consecutive triple-digit buyer. That makes him your Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week. Darley Stallion Hard Spun is Dan Zig's last Grade 1 winning son, who sired more first crop stakes winners than any other stallion. No stallion standing for less than $60,000 can top Hard Spun's 7 Grade 1 winners since 2012. Learn more about Hard Spun and all the Darley Stallions by visiting DarleyAmerica.com.
Hi, this is Calvin Burrow. You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. This freaky fast performance is brought to you by your Lexington, Kentucky area Jimmy Johns.
And they're into the stretch, and it's Accelerate. And on the inside, Mendelssohn Thundersnow roaring up between those two as they arrive at the eighth pole. Then Yoshida Axelrod, Gunavera's closing in late. It is Accelerate. He's coming down to the 16th pole in front. Thundersnow on the inside is next. Then Mendelssohn, Gunavera, and Yoshida on the far outside. They're coming to the wire. And Accelerate wins the Breeders' Cup Classic for John Sadler. Gunavera was second, and then it was Yoshida and Thundersnow in a final time of 202.93.
A big year for Accelerate. A big year for Joel Rosario with the Breeders' Cup World Championships. He won 3 of the 14 races over the two-day event. Welcome back to the Equine Forum here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Jude and I, nice enough to be joined now by a good friend of the network's and of ours personally, Ron Anderson, jockey agent for Joel Rosario. Hey, Ron, it's Jude and Anthony here on the Equine Forum. What's happening?
Good morning, guys.
How's it going?
As of last weekend, pretty good.
Yeah. Those deposit enough. Slips keep getting bigger and bigger.
Lucky enough, yeah. That's you know, great. I told everybody that wanted to listen, I've been on a lot of horses with him the last, I guess, 3 years, almost every race. I said, look, I really think I'm on less quantity, but I'm on better quality. And I had 4 good chances, and lucky enough that 3 of them won, and the one that was compromised, the 4th one, was a soft turf for Christoph, who ended up 3rd. So we're very, very excited about everything that's gone on.
So, you know, a lot of people a lot of fans, if you will, don't really appreciate or understand what your job is as a jockey's agent. And how difficult it can be, especially with an instance like Accelerate. So Victor Espinosa is his regular rider. Victor goes down in a horrific spill, and Accelerate comes open. You're one of probably 612 jockey agents that called John Sadler within the few days when people realized that Victor wasn't going to be back in time to ride him, perhaps for the rest of the year. Talk us through that process.
Well, you know, one of the worst things of my job is what I call chasing the ambulance, which June, you know, he understands all that too. If somebody goes down, you have to realize, you know, they need replacements on these horses, and you don't want to look like you're a jerk by running behind the ambulance, but it's part of what goes on. So I end up getting a hold of John, of which, you know, I have a long, outstanding relationship with John that goes back to, 70s when he first came around and when I first came around. And we were kind of mentored by somebody named Eddie Gregson a little bit, you know, that he showed all of us the class and a lot to do with the business. And I called him and said, look, obviously I'm available. And he was very receptive at the time. And it wasn't just because of me. You know, he has a long, outstanding relationship with Joel, too. They did very, very well before Joel came east. So he said something along the lines, give me a couple days here and let me handle this. And I knew, you know, there were, like you said, 600 guys trying to get on this horse in a million-dollar race. And I casually, a couple days later, thought, you know what, I'm not hearing back from him. I'm going to touch base again. And the words from him were, don't worry about anything. And I went to Joel and I said, you know, it looks like this is going to work. And we lucky enough to get on the horse. And I'll be perfectly honest with you, I've been lucky enough to win a lot of big races. I mean, I think that's the 31st Breeders' Cup that I've been fortunate enough to win with all these riders.
Wow.
So, happy for myself, but for me, it was really, really gratifying. for John to have his day in the sun. He's a classy guy. He treats everybody with a lot of respect. And he, you know, he went 0 for 40, whatever it was, of which the first thing I said, you know, Bobby Franco was 0 for 37 before Jerry Bailey won on Squirtle Squirt, who I was, I rode with Jerry. So, you know, like John even said to me in a conversation afterwards, you know, some of the horses they had taken of the 40, some were claiming horses that had kind of earned their way. They were long shots. The owners wanted to try it. So I was so excited for he and his owner to get that, you know, that day in the sun, which is, I'm sure, gratifying for everybody.
Yeah, it's amazing how people think it's so easy to win a Breeders' Cup race. You know, I mean, those races are harder to win than the Kentucky Derby. There's usually 8 or 10 horses in the Kentucky Derby that really don't belong in there. They may have the points and whatever, but they're not coming into the race the right way or whatever. You know, so you got to overcome trips and all that. The Breeders' Cup, every horse is a grade one winner, or at the very least a grade two winner. And people act like you just, you know, put your horse in there and you're supposed to win. I mean, it's kind of crazy to me. And the press was a little bit brutal to John all week long, and he handled it with such grace and aplomb. You know, when I texted him after the race, I told him, I said, you know, so much credit goes to you for handling that, you know, and not blowing your top. I mean, it was, you're right, it was so great to see him get that. You know, I said, now they'll say you're no Jay Robbins because you haven't won it 2 years in a row. it's crazy.
Yeah, it's very difficult, and like you've touched on, the other thing too is, you know, lots of times these horses are going to another racetrack, another state. You know, the surfaces are different, the weather is different. So, like you said, they are extremely, extremely difficult to win. And I'm just happy for John. You know, the monkey's off his back. He can go forward now, and you know. On his resume, he has not just a Breeders' Cup, but a Breeders' Cup Classic, and that's a very elite group.
Before Joel piloted Accelerate on Breeders' Cup Saturday, you guys won both of the juvenile races on dirt Friday afternoon. Jaywalk and the Phillies, and perhaps, especially with Jude, you know, bringing up the Kentucky Derby, more importantly, game winner stays undefeated for Bob Baffert, winning the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. In this game, we start looking for our Derby horse the minute after the prior Derby is over. How'd they come out of that? And looks like you're on two champions for the season.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Jude and I were around a very we thought was famous jockey's agent, and David and Gordo's father, Jerry. And he used to run around all the time and say, you know, I'd rather be lucky than smart. Well, as far as the game winner situation, that was lucky, because I was at the Pacific Classic on the day that he started the first time. And I really think that they kind of thought this horse was going to not maybe break real sharp, and he'd come running, and maybe Mike or Graydon or whoever was out there would end up back on him. But this horse broke and won the first time out fairly impressively. And then the second time he ran was a big day in New York, and I couldn't be there. And he actually threw this horse in the game winner in the last second or the day of entries, because I guess he thought his other one in the race was possibly, you know, not as good or whatever. And he ends up winning with Mario Gutierrez. And I'm thinking after that, well, I couldn't ride him in a second race. I'm going to pitch to try and ride him Breeders' Cup Day. And Bob said, look, I just need to tell the owners what I'm doing, and I want you back on the horse. So we got lucky with him. And, you know, John Services Philly, all it took was he called me up. He said, I got one for you. And I had blown his Oaks, you know, his Kentucky Oaks filly, 2 years ago when Joel broke his wrist. You know, he'd been riding her, and
Catherine Sophia
ended up.
Yeah.
And yes. And he said to me, I've got one for you. And I said, oh, good. He said, real good. You got the call for the Frisette, and she went around. I'm sure you guys saw the replay of the race. It's just like, it was a bit of a, you know, wow moment for me. Nice looking filly, dialed in, you know, young stallion, but the way she won was just, you know, really, really, for me, what I call a wow moment. And Joelle was very impressed with her too. So, you know, we got lucky with those two, and then obviously with John, and it's a huge day, for us.
Well, you've always been the kind of guy that has relationships with people, and you're not an agent that gives you the song and dance and all of that stuff. If you have a call, you have a call. Always upstanding in the way you conduct your business, and I think that's, you know, been a hallmark for you and why you're so successful.
Well, I pride myself on trying to stay with my, you know, I know what I want to do in a lot of these races and who I want to ride, and I pride myself by not trying to throw anybody under the bus. You know, some guys get to a point where they're a little confused and they go give calls away, and then they try and weasel off, what I call weasel off, and all they do, you know, when you give somebody a call with the A riders that I've had over the years, you're not only compromising your reputation and your relationship with the trainer, but the owner. And you got to think, you know, some of the grooms and gallop people are excited. Oh, we have Joelle, or we have Jerry Bailey, or, you know, we have Garrett Gomez or Gary Stevens, all the guys, Chris Santley, all the guys that I've represented. Then you got to go back and say, well, you know what, I got to take it. It doesn't work well going forward, because the next time they have something that's any good, they're obviously going to remember that, and they're going to go looking elsewhere before you. So I pride myself in trying to conduct myself in that manner. And, you know, obviously over the years I've been lucky enough to stay like that.
Ron, we just have 2 minutes left. Talk about the decision you guys announced earlier this week that you and Joelle are going to go to California for the winter. The last few years you've been down at Gulfstream Park. Talk to us a little bit about that decision to go back to California when Santa Anita starts right after Christmas.
We'll be there for 3 months leading up into Keeneland. Joelle's had people, you know, bugging him ever since he left. Can you come back? When you want to come back? And I just thought it might be the right segue to go back there for the winter. The racing's good. Turf course is good. Gulfstream Park has gotten to a point where they, you know, a lot of those guys are looking for those Calder kids to come get on them and gallop them and everything. And the New York guys tend to back off a lot on their races and their horses for the winter anymore. So I thought, you know what, let's go ahead and try this and see what happens. And already, as you would imagine, there's been quite a few people knocking on the door already. So looking forward to go back to, you know, where I was an agent and basically from 1973 till 2000 when I came east to take Jerry Bailey. And it'll be fun. You know, I have family out there. Obviously, I have a lot of friends and spent the biggest majority of my life there. So we'll see how it goes.
But you guys are coming back, right? I already had an emotional enough week. I can't be crying anymore.
No, I know. You know what? I understand that you're a big fan of Joelle's, and we appreciate that. And, no, I can't see any reason to stay there. Keeneland will bounce into who he was leading right. He was leading right at Keeneland the year before last. He holds a record at Keeneland. And I'm going to make a statement. I never say never, but I'm going to make a never say never a prediction here. No one will ever, ever win 38 races at Keeneland in a 16-day period like he did, I guess, about 4 years ago. That record will never, ever be beaten. So we like Keeneland. It's a great spot, and we'll be back for that.
All right. Ron, thanks for some time this morning. See you over here later on. Best of luck the rest of the year and when you head out west for the Santa Anita meet that starts on December 26th.
Appreciate the time, guys, and thanks. Keep up the good work.
All right. Thanks, Ron. Ron Anderson, jockey agent extraordinaire. He's got Joelle Rosario's book. One more break. We'll come back and wrap this equine forum here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Power.
Royal Delta, my miserable Royal Delta has won the Breeders' Cup Ladies Classic.
Passion.
Pioneer of the Nile, full stretch, but keeping Chocolate Candy at bay. And Pioneer of
performance.
She wins it. Emollient for Mike Smith with a huge run in this grade one.
Empire Maker is back in the USA with his first crop of Gainsway sired yearlings selling up to $1.35 million and a Keeneland September book one average of $498,000. A champion on the racetrack, Empire Maker won both the Florida Derby and Belmont Stakes on his way to earning nearly $2 million. Now a highly influential sire with 11 Grade 1 winners, including Pioneer of the Nile and Bodemeister, along with four-time Grade 1 winner Emollient and three-time Eclipse champion Royal Delta.
Power, passion, performance. You know I'm talking about Gainsway Farm.
Live racing returns to Mahoning Valley Racecourse on Friday, October 26th. Our regular schedule features racing Monday through Wednesday at 12:45 Eastern and Saturday starting at 12:15. Be sure to join us Monday, November 19th for the meet signature event, the $250,000 Steel Valley Sprint for three-year-olds at 6 furlongs. Plus the co-feature $75,000 Mahoning Valley Distaff for fillies and mares. It's all at Mahoning Valley Racecourse. Visit us online at HollywoodMahoningValley.com.
You know, our Jimmy John's new 9-grain wheat sub has the perfect amount of grain.
Freak, yeah, it does. Any less, it'd be grain lacking. Any more, it'd be obnoxious.
9 grains. It's just so confident. I mean, it says I'm high quality, I'm substantial, I'm flavorful, but I don't have to prove myself to anyone.
This 9-grain wheat sub is practically an inspirational poster.
I want to possess the character and depth of this 9-grain wheat sub.
You guys talking about being that 9-grain wheat sub again?
Try our new 9-grain wheat sub, Jimmy John's. Wheat yeah, freak yeah.
Adina Springs Stallion, Mucho Macho Man. A precocious juvenile, a classic 3-year-old, and dominant older horse.
For Rajiv Baraj, Mucho Macho Man wins the Risen Star.
Mucho Macho Man in front, followed by Hembook, who continues to close ground, but will run out of racetrack as Mucho Macho Man wins the 126th Suburban.
Mucho Macho Man Declaration of War will take charge of Final Man. Mucho Macho Man!
Mucho Macho Man's first crop includes black type runner Bell Laura and TDN Rising Stars Mucho Gusto with trainer Bob Baffert and Fortin Hill in the barn of trainer Chad Brown. In the sales ring, yearlings by Mucho Macho Man have proven popular, selling for up to $170,000, with his first two-year-olds bringing up to $625,000. Mucho Macho Man, standing at Adina Springs. Visit AdinaStallions.com.
This is the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum here on HRRN. You sick of me yet, Jude?
No, but I'm glad the show's winding down. It's been a very long week.
You and I, you stuck around for the call-in show as well. And if you missed anything, head back to horseracingradio.net. Jock Talk presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. Trainer Talk presented by Fazig Tipton. The Brisnet.com call-in show. What else we got? Weekend Stakes Preview. That's the most important one, I guess. Weekend Stakes Preview. Go back and listen. Podcast form, most important one today. Jude and I have 10 Saturday stakes for you. We gave you some dirt picks for the two stakes here at the Big Apple, at the Big A. We're off the turf here at Aqueduct today. I'm still waiting for scratches. And I'm going to run downstairs and do Talking Horses in about an hour. So, fun week, though. Thanks to everybody this morning as well. You know, got Louis Saez in the middle of a busy morning. Got Ron Anderson, Lacey Gaudette, Stuart Morris as well. Dr. Jim Chiappetta was earlier at the Breeders' Cup. Thanks to everyone. Like all of our guests, they'll all receive some apparel from Embrace the Race. Embrace your passion over at EmbraceTheRace.com. Great job. Thanks for pinch hitting on the call-in show, and fun week with you, Pontiff.
Yeah, it was a good week. We picked some winners and made some money, and what the heck. We'll do it again next week.
Talk to some friends.
Yep.
Yes, sir. We'll do it again. We'll be back on Wednesday with Express Bet Radio. 3 o'clock on Sirius 219, XM 201, horseracingradio.net. Of course, thanks to our producer, Lee Delapina, on behalf of Jude Feld and Lee, and everyone at HRN. Hope you have a great weekend. I hope you win all of your photo finishes. You got something to say, Jude?
Good night, Barbados.